W Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The Senate is fed up with Russia's president, says Senator Lindsey Graham, South Carolina Republican, on an effort with Democrats for new sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine.
The Senate and the House of Representatives in the next 2 weeks will be moving forward with a sanction bill that's bone-crushing.
Graham speaking in Paris after visiting Ukraine. Ukrainian drones attacked four Russian military airfields overnight, damaging or destroying about 40 planes, including bombers. That from videos ABC News has verified and reports from Ukraine. That means billions of dollars in damage to Russia's military, says one analyst. After the Gaza Health Ministry said Israeli troops opened fire on people at a food distribution center in Rafah, Israeli military officials say Israeli troops acted against several suspects. A video confirms bloodied people being brought into Nasser Hospital in Gaza. This is ABC News. As measles cases in the U.S. top 1,000, this from ABC's Morgan Norwood.
In Colorado, officials confirming the state's second outbreak of the year after three passengers on a Turkish Airlines flight tested positive, including one fully vaccinated adult. Health officials say while breakthrough cases among those vaccinated are rare, measles is extremely contagious and can linger in the air for up to 2 hours.
Talks with reps from Russia and Ukraine are scheduled tomorrow in Istanbul. Temple University and Philadelphia city officials revealing the first time a license plate reading camera on campus led to the arrest of a man who was wanted in three states. Shows how cameras are increasingly being used, even on campuses. Major Corporal Richard Chambers of the Newcastle County Police Department, Delaware.
In the vehicle was property that linked him to the crimes, including latent fingerprints and DNA.
Software integrated into the 1,500 cameras on campus. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
Mino and the Mayor.
We go to a place and you can just, we actually reserved it already, but they got, even they got the swan. You know what I mean?
I don't know. What is a swan? What do you mean?
Well, it's hard plastic.
Todd's got a smirk on his face. Here's a comment.
Okay, so I've seen paddle boats.
Right?
Are you talking about one that's actually built like a swan?
Yeah.
I want a picture of that. That'll be my Facebook page.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning, 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 and 96.5 WISS. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The House budget bill would reform environmental permitting in Wisconsin and nationwide, potentially streamlining the process and reducing litigation. Here's Brent Pivido.
Under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, large projects with the potential to affect the environment must complete environmental assessments or impact statements. This includes all federal agencies and impacts private development projects that need federal permits. The new provision would create an expedited review process for a fee of 25% on top of the usual cost of a NEPA review. Thomas Hockman with the Foundation for American Innovation says the new rule would also shield projects from NEPA-related litigation.
There are quotes from folks like outgoing EPA General Counsel, who say 90% of the details in a NEPA review are purely there for litigation proofing the document. You can imagine if you only need 10% of the details in that environmental impact statement because you know that you are not at risk of litigation, that is almost certainly a radically faster timeline.
In court, federal agencies have an 80% success rate on appeal, and their environmental reviews are not often changed through litigation. One study of NEPA reviews shows solar energy projects face the highest litigation rate. Frequent litigation was also seen with pipelines, transmission lines, and wind energy projects. Despite shortening the process, Hockman says the reforms may also make projects subject to shifting political agendas.
If you let each administration determine what the cost is and also spend time determining what the cost should be, you could potentially see differences in treatment. So, you know, maybe a Republican administration drags their feet and puts out a really high cost for a wind project that's going through an environmental impact statement. Maybe a Democratic administration does the same for a pipeline that's going through an environmental impact statement.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Brett Pivato. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny, but smoky skies overhead. Light west winds today, highs in the mid-70s. Overnight, a few clouds. Lows will drop back into the upper 50s. A warmer day Monday with sunshine, still some smoke. Southwest winds breezy and upper 80s. It's 69 at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm going to light it up State Street style because I'll be live from Madison. Joining me in studio will be Madison filmmaker Austin Galante and UW Cinematech programmer Ben Reiser.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley. And we are going to have an incredibly important conversation today. But before we get there, hey, Amanda, have you been able to enjoy the beautiful weather?
I was actually camping this weekend.
What? Where'd you go?
We went to Sleepy Dragon Campground in Rio, which is just a little north of Madison. Still Madison.
It's Rio.
Rio, my bad. Not from the area. But it was veteran-owned, veteran-ran, and it was awesome. The first night we froze.
Oh, yeah.
And we went and bought a heater.
Were you in a tent or a camper?
A tent. Uh-huh. Me, my 2-year-old, my 6-year-old, and my other half. Yes.
Oh, you are brave. Wow. And the name of the campground again?
Sleepy Dragon.
Sleepy Dragon in Rio. Highly mm-hmm. recommended?
Oh, I do. It's small enough where you're not overwhelmed, mm-hmm. but there's enough going on that you're entertained.
And the kids had a great time?
Oh, they had a splendid time.
There's something about just getting the kids out in nature to get dirty and see bugs and mm-hmm. splash around in the water. And...
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a lot of sand mm-hmm. everywhere. I'm still working on that.
That's so great. We took a bike ride.
Nice.
From De Pere to Kakana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And the halfway point is Dick's Drive-In, which is like part of my childhood. And so I got myself a Maxi Burger and a Turtle Sundae because I needed all that fuel to get home again.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really interesting because I bumped into a couple people who I didn't know, but they recognized me and they wanted to talk about stuff that's political, things that are happening in the world. And you know what they wanted to talk about? Medicaid.
Nope. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. They wanted to talk about healthcare and Medicaid, which leads us into our topic for today, which is Medicaid. And I'm welcoming two incredible advocates for us, for our communities, for our families. Mimi Gerner.
Hi, thank you.
And Lynn Meschke.
Hi, thanks for having us.
You bet. Mimi, you have to get closer to the microphone, girl.
Yes.
Yeah. You're soft-spoken anyway, and you have so much to say and so much important stuff. So why don't we just start with Medicaid is confusing. And we've heard a lot about Medicaid cuts. And if you tend to listen to Republicans, you hear, we're not cutting Medicaid. Everybody who needs it is going to get it. If you listen to Democrats, the world is on fire. Medicaid is really, we're losing it. It's scary. What is Medicaid?
Medicaid in Wisconsin can be really confusing. Well, in every state it can be because it goes by a lot of different names. Mm-hmm. And one of the statistics that has surprised me from all the learning I've done in this work has been that 90% of people are going to use Medicaid at some point in their life.
90% of 90%. Americans are going to use Medicaid at some point
at some
in their
point.
Life.
Yep. And in Wisconsin, it goes by so many different names that some people don't even know that they receive Medicaid support. It goes by Badger Care in Wisconsin. Forward Health is the card. It doesn't mm-hmm. say Medicaid on there anywhere.
So people might not even know that they're on Medicaid.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that is part of the battle here is that people are at risk of losing something that they don't even know they're going to lose, right? And so it can go by Katie Beckett, which is what my son receives, CLTS, which is Children's Long-Term Service Waiver. There's Family Care, IRIS. Lynn, you can chime in with some here, too.
There's, you said Katie Beckett, Children's Long-Term. There's MAP. There's SSI, Medicaid. I would agree with Mimi in that it shocks me how many people I have run into in the community who will say, oh, that's awful what's happening with Medicaid, but it doesn't have anything to do with me because I'm on Badger Care.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, uh-oh, Badger Care is Medicaid. Uh-huh. And then, there's a conversation that goes with that. I think it's important to know that Medicaid covers 18% of Wisconsinites, so that's 1.3 million Wisconsinites are on Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
It pays for 4 in 10 births, and you know this. Mm-hmm. It's the highest, the single largest payer for maternity care in the United States. There's a lot of people, a lot of women getting maternity care through Medicaid and wouldn't get it any other way.
Especially in rural areas. My, yes. It's over 50% of the births in rural parts of the country.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 1 in 3 children are on Medicaid. Almost every child who's in the foster care system is on Medicaid. 46% of Wisconsin kids who have special needs are on Medicaid. 6 in 10 nursing home residents. That's another conversation that we have with people because they tend to think that it by the time you're a senior, you're on Medicare or something like that, and it will mm-hmm. cover your nursing home care. There's a lot of people whose nursing home care, their money has run out, and now Medicaid is covering it for them.
Six in 10. Most
yep.
people who are in nursing homes are on Medicaid.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And one last thing I will say is that 40% of veterans who are enrolled in Medicaid, it is their only form of insurance. So we truly are caring for the most vulnerable and the people who are most important to us.
You did something at a rally one time that was really powerful. You named some of these things off and you had people, as you were calling out some of these programs, raise their hand. And you don't realize until you look around the room, and you didn't even call out all the programs. Yeah. You looked around the room and every hand was raised. Everyone was affected in one way or another, either directly or because someone they loved was receiving benefits, which impacts you. If you have a parent in a nursing home, that means they're not home in your home right. so that you don't have to care for them because you probably aren't the best person to care for them your situation.
That leads into the systems that all this money supports, right? Uh-huh. And especially in our rural communities, when we have nursing homes and people might think Medicaid's not going to affect me, I don't use it, that nursing home will be there. But when that nursing home closes because it's not receiving the money from Medicaid, you're not going to have that nursing home for your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to drive an hour and a half away to go to the one that they're in because that one's still open.
Right.
And a lot of these care support services and clinics and physical therapy and in-home care, they're supported heavily by Medicaid dollars. And if they can't keep their doors open, those services aren't going to exist for the people who might have private insurance who think that they'll always be there.
Mm-hmm.
And every provider that you talk to says the same thing, right? The Medicaid reimbursement rate is ridiculously low, but it provides sort of foundational dollars for these facilities, these providers, these caregivers that they can count on.
Mm-hmm.
And if that goes away, now everything is very uncertain, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody is getting rich off of Medicaid.
No.
None of these providers, none of these caregivers. So they're already running on a shoestring budget. And so you take those Medicaid dollars away. And like Mimi said, it doesn't just go away for Medicaid recipients. It goes away for everybody.
So why do you two care so much? What brought you into this universe?
I have a son who receives Medicaid, who's disabled. He is autistic. And from even before we knew that, he was receiving supports through the Birth to Three program. He went to early childhood, which some of Medicaid funds
mm-hmm.
with, I don't think at that point he did, but that was kind of how we segued into this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did find out he was autistic, he was enrolled in Katie Beckett. So he received Medicaid through that, which provided in-home therapy for us. And Katie Beckett is an interesting program because it allows Medicaid support, and it's not dependent on that family's income,
mm-hmm.
Which and this can lead into the conversation about the stigma that is attached to Medicaid too, and why we sometimes don't know that our family or community members or neighbors are receiving Medicaid, because a lot of people don't talk about it because of that.
Right.
But so he received Medicaid through that, which got him the therapy in home. And it was just such a lifeline for him, but also for us. And I think that that underlining of that point is important, that it's not just about the care that that person receives, but it is a support for this whole family, right?
Because
his therapist would come in, I would see how they work with him. I would see how his teachers would work with him with speech and physical therapy at school. And I was like, oh, well, I could do that at home. Like, these are words that I can use to support him too. These are techniques that I can do to help him.
And reinforce those behaviors.
Right.
And provide that foundation, because if they don't get that foundation as young people, it's really hard for them to thrive as adults.
Right. That brain growth that happens in those early ages, which is why we have these early intervention programs. And he's just thriving for it now. And now we use it not quite as much, but recently we got him back into speech and occupational therapy, which I don't know if we would, because just the eval alone for speech, I think, was like $700.
Oh,
which
wow.
Medicaid helps us with. But yeah, I mean, it's those kinds of things that, like, you either have to pick and choose if we didn't have it, right? We might have to opt for once a month or every 2 weeks, but now we can go every week and he can get that support that he needs and helps him.
That's the voice of Mimi Gerner. She is a Medicaid advocate. Lynn Meschke, you are also a Medicaid advocate. Why?
I have a young adult son. He's 23. He is more significantly involved than Mimi's son is. He has been in some sort of Medicaid-supported services since he was a toddler. So we did birth to three. He did early childhood. He did the children's long-term waiver. And now we're in family care. And family care covers his day program at the CP Center, which is shout out to the CP Center because they're fabulous, as is the Spiro and Curative and all those folks. I mean, they are doing the Lord's work for sure. Yes, he's in a day program at the CP Center. He is happy. He is healthy. You know, over the years, Medicaid has covered braces and medical equipment. We have excellent private insurance through my husband's employer. And you'd be shocked how many things aren't covered through that. I mean, things that I would call necessary and certainly physician prescribed. So, I mean, he's had surgery, equipment, braces, day program, all of these things that Medicaid has helped us pay for. You know, I wake up every day grateful that we have Medicaid coverage, even if we don't have to use it. It gives me and my husband some peace of mind that Henry will get what he needs. And when we're not able to care for him, he will get what he needs. Mm-hmm. And that is everything for a parent of a kid with special needs.
I want to emphasize that you said that you have excellent private insurance, but it does not cover all the things that Henry needs.
No. It's shocking. I mean, I just assumed when you start on this journey, you think we have insurance, we're good. Wow. It's very quickly you realize that that is not the case. And there are an awful lot of provisions in private insurance that allow them, I would use the word to discriminate, but you know, that's a legal term. So I'm not an attorney, but allow them to deprive individuals of things that they absolutely need to live their lives. And that their physician has prescribed. And it is shocking. You learn that early on.
Hey, I'm really surprised at the number of different programs within Medicaid. As you were like talking about Henry's journey throughout this process, all of the different pieces and parts that, I mean, most of us don't know the difference between Medicaid and Medicare. Right. They're confusing. But then to really do a deep dive and understand all of the different parts and how they fit together, there has to be a lot of red tape.
There is, which is of concern and pretty relevant to what we're talking about here, because what the bill that currently has passed the House and is being considered in the Senate adds more red tape. And so now you have families who are literally just paddling as fast as they can to keep their heads above water and struggling already with the current system. And now you're saying to them, you know, there's going to be more paperwork. There's going to be more deadlines you have to meet, all that sort of thing. It's overwhelming. And we know statistically that a lot of people fall off of Medicaid because they don't have the ability to complete those forms or meet those deadlines.
Well, we're going to talk more about that later in the program. But when we come back from this short break, let's talk about the impact on, we've talked about your personal stories, but let's talk about communities. Yeah. All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on Air.
Remembering Vietnam, brought to you by The Dispensary.
We dug holes, little foxholes, to jump into and take cover when you heard them coming. But after a few weeks, you didn't worry about it anymore. What was the point? They weren't aiming at you. They just fired the damn things. So if you were going to get hit, you were really going to get hit. That was my attitude, which I realize now was really stupid. But that's just the way it was. I don't know why I did it, but instead of jumping into a hole, I walked around with my camera, hoping to get a great picture. When sappers got into the perimeter, they would have explosive charges and satchel charges on them. A few were suicide attacks with everything strapped to their bodies. They tried to kill as many guys as they could. It seemed like that was their main mission. Mike Brzezinski, United States Army, Vietnam.
Hear this full story at WGBW.FM. Click on Remembering Vietnam. Brought to you by The Dispensary. Online at thed8dispensary.com.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.FM today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.FM/newsletter. Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your first chance to win in this statewide contest starting Monday, June 2nd at 7 a.m. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Place north side, decor so nice.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. We are talking about Medicaid with advocates Lynn Meschke and Mimi Gerner. I got it. I know who you are. But first, I wanted to mention we are listening to Axe and the Hatchet Men. Usually, I like to feature Wisconsin-based bands, but this is a band I saw last weekend at Hinterland's 30th anniversary party, and I just couldn't not feature them because I loved them so much. They're Chicago-based. They're touring across the country with upcoming dates all across Wisconsin and literally the region. So Axe and the Hatchet Men, if you love the Strokes like I do, they've got a new single, Blinking Lights, I think it's called. I'm with Albert Hammond Jr.
Blurry.
From the Stroke. Blurry, thank you. It's brilliant, so please listen. You'll be hearing different songs from them throughout our episode today. But back to business. I wanted to share a story from a friend of mine, Jordan Anderson, who lives in Auburndale. He is a man who lives with a disability. He's an incredible advocate, a young man. For disabled folks. He says, I live with my parents and have a full-time job at a local clinic. I use IRIS, the Medicaid self-directed support waiver, for all of my personal care, such as help getting out of bed and into my wheelchair and getting to my job. The Medicaid card and the IRIS program have also helped purchase medical equipment and supplies I need to stay healthy and live my everyday life. I worry about the future. If something were to happen to my parents, if Medicaid was cut
and my parents could not provide care, I don't know what would happen to me. There is already a caregiver crisis, and it's hard to find workers to help me. If Medicaid is cut, it will make the caregiver crisis even worse. Without Medicaid, I would not be able to keep my job. Don't cut Medicaid. I know. This is your life. This is what you live every single day. And, you know, as we were talking about this between segments, Amanda chimed in. Yeah. And you have a story too, Amanda.
Oh, yeah. So my late husband had cystic fibrosis and he was on Medicaid because it was the only thing, like, he had cystic fibrosis. He underwent a bilateral lung transplant.
Wow.
Like, everything. And he, when we got married, I purposely had to work less hours because, and so did he, because they felt if he made too much money, he was too healthy and he didn't need that insurance. So we had to live basically in poverty to make sure that he could live. And it was the most backwards thing because people are like, you need to get out of that hole, or like, you need to stop leeching off the government and whatnot. Because that's what everyone associates Medicaid with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you get no option because you have to make less in order to live, because like all the equipment he needed, he had O2 machines, he had O2 sensors, he had a feed tube. Like, how are we supposed to afford that on $7.25 minimum wage?
Mm-hmm. Hey, clearly this affects our personal, our families,
mm-hmm.
how we financially survive. But that also feeds into our greater communities. It affects us economically as communities. Can you speak to that?
Well, I can speak to here in Brown County.
Mm-hmm.
So Brown County receives, I believe it's $466 million a year in Medicaid funding. So I should back up. Medicaid recipients in Brown County spend $466 million a year on Medicaid covered services. That money supports, I want to say 1,400 businesses, but let's just say it's more than 1,000 businesses.
Wait a minute. This is Medicaid funding that supports small business.
Yes, absolutely. It is a huge economic driver in our state. $11 billion in federal Medicaid funding comes into Wisconsin. 30,000 businesses get some portion of that money. So this is a huge economic driver for our state. And then, again, to the point that Amanda makes, is that when families get the support that they need, it allows them to leave their homes and work. There are a lot of people who, if they don't qualify for Medicaid, one of those individuals has to stay home
mm-hmm.
and provide care for their child, their aging parent.
So they're not in the workforce.
No.
Contributing.
Yes.
For both their family and the greater
yes.
economy.
Yes. So it has a huge negative impact on our economy, and it's an enormous missed opportunity. And I really struggle with that because legislators will say, you need to work more. People need to work. They need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They need to try harder. And what we know is that sometimes things happen in your family that are so enormous
mm-hmm.
and require so much attention and care that they're really, you have to choose. You know, if I can't get Medicaid and I can't cover the needs of my loved one, then I have to stay home and provide those services myself, and I can't work. I know so many highly educated parents who have had to, who have huge earning potential and have had to alter their work life in some way in order to care for their child or an aging parent.
Mm. Mamie, your thoughts?
I'm just looking at statistics that I brought along. And of that $11 billion in Wisconsin, that 75% of that was spent on children, seniors, and people with disabilities, which is crazy. That these people may not be receiving support anymore because of these cuts.
And not only will they not be getting the support, but that investment in
right.
small business, in our communities, in our economy
right.
will not be there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and all of those people who work in those businesses, they take their salary and they spend it out into their community.
Yes. Yeah.
So they're buying homes, buying cars, paying, you know, going to the grocery store, going to shops, all that sort of thing. So it is the tentacles of Medicaid in our communities is enormous.
It's investment that
it
continues to
on
grow.
On all levels.
Yes. And we didn't even talk about health and well-being, you know, creating that foundation that makes us healthier as adults and community members. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the controversies. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley with the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Guess that's just what I get.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The Senate is fed up with Russia's president, says Senator Lindsey Graham, South Carolina Republican, on an effort with Democrats for new sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine.
The Senate and the House of Representatives in the next 2 weeks will be moving forward with a sanction bill that's bone-crushing.
Graham speaking in Paris after visiting Ukraine. Ukrainian drones attacked four Russian military airfields overnight, damaging or destroying about 40 planes, including bombers. That from videos ABC News has verified and reports from Ukraine. That means billions of dollars in damage to Russia's military, says one analyst. After the Gaza Health Ministry said Israeli troops opened fire on people at a food distribution center in Rafah, Israeli military officials say Israeli troops acted against several suspects. A video confirms bloodied people being brought into Nasser Hospital in Gaza. This is ABC News.
The Brewers sweep the Phillies. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. 10 days ago, when you saw the Brewers would be playing the Phillies in Philadelphia, you wondered if they could get one win during that series. Today, they swept the Phillies. The final score 5-2. Milwaukee down 2-1 in the game. Coming back in the seventh, they win all three games in Philadelphia. The Brewers have now won 7 in a row. The Phillies now in a 4-game losing streak. Their fans booing them after the game today at Citizens Bank Park. Pat Murphy.
Phillies fans are great. You know what I mean? And they're awesome. Anybody would love playing in front of these fans. You know what I mean? Because they're so passionate.
So the Brewers road trip continues. They head to Cincinnati to open up a series against the Reds tomorrow night. NFL, Packers resume their OTAs, organized team activity practices, this week in Green Bay. In golf, the final round today of the Women's U.S. Open in Erin Hills, just outside of Hartford, Wisconsin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Major Margaret Houlihan, also known as actress Loretta Swit, has passed away. Swift played the character, also known as Hot Lips, for the entire 11-year run of MASH. According to Deadline, she was nominated for an Emmy Award every year and won twice in 1980 and 1982. Swit passed away at her New York home from natural causes last Friday at the age of 87. Hot Lips and Frank, together again. More troubling news regarding Kevin Costner's too-long-to-say movie title and ridiculously long movie, also known as Horizon, and American Saga Parts 1 and 2. Good grief. Last week, Costner was accused by a stunt person of sexual harassment, and now the production is being accused of not paying its costume fees. The United Costume Corporation is seeking $350,000 for unpaid fees, according to Variety. Just a word to the wise, to the Yellowstone star, those costumes may come in handy if creditors come knocking. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny, but smoky skies overhead. Light west winds today, highs in the mid-70s. Overnight, a few clouds. Lows will drop back into the upper 50s. A warmer day Monday with sunshine, still some smoke, southwest winds breezy and upper 80s, currently 71 degrees.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce.
Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you, too, can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome back comedian-singer Rob Paravonian and Milwaukee-based actor Rob Martin, and I talk about our favorite movie gangsters. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are talking about Medicaid with advocates Lynn Meschke and Mimi Gerner. If you missed the beginning of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts, and you can always find me here on Saturdays and Sundays at 3 on WGBW and WISS, and of course, streaming on the Civic Media app. Do you guys have the Civic Media app?
I do.
Yes, absolutely.
It's so good. You can find all the stations. Mm-hmm. You can text in with questions and comments. I just love it. I listen to it all the time. So I want to talk about, we've talked about your personal stories. We've talked about the impact of Medicaid on our families, our communities, our economy. Let's talk about the controversy. Yeah, because there are things, you know, when you hear politicians talk about Medicaid, on the right, they're saying, we're not going to cut Medicaid. Don't worry. If you need it, you're going to get it. And on the left, they're saying, wait a minute, that's not what we're seeing here. The biggest area of federal savings in the budget appears to involve work requirements. It seems logical. Like, well, if you can work, you should work, right? Yeah. I mean, work or volunteer or education. I think those are the three things. Why? Poke some holes in that for me, because it doesn't work for everybody.
No, definitely not. Folks who are on Medicaid, 60% are already working.
7 in 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those that are not working are children, elderly, disabled, where they have restrictions where they can't work, or they may be in school, college. So the people who are working, by and large, are, a lot of them are also caregivers to their family. So they are unpaid, working at home. For them to leave their home to work, someone would have to come into their home to care for their loved one who's there. So there's a lot of holes in that argument that the people are, by and large, are already working. And as we heard, there's restrictions, right, on how much income you can have, even when you are receiving Medicaid.
I want to emphasize the at-home caregiver, because it is, those are the unsung heroes. There is no pay there.
Right.
No. You never, ever get a break. It's like being a stay-at-home mom. You never, ever get a break. Mm-hmm. You live where you work, and it's 24-7, and it is not easy. Oh, God bless you. Yeah. Lynn.
I think what's important to note is that the idea of work provisions isn't, work requirements isn't a new idea. It has been tried. Arkansas and Georgia both tried this idea, and it failed miserably, and they don't do it anymore. So what we know is that in Arkansas, they were the first state to implement work requirements. It cost taxpayers $26 million a year just to create the infrastructure to administer that.
Hold on. It actually cost the state more? Work requirements cost the state more?
Yes, because you have to, it's more paperwork. You have to have more people that monitor that paperwork and process that paperwork and go into homes. I have someone come into my home 9 times a year to make sure that Henry is still disabled.
oh, boy.
That, right? Yeah. I mean, and, you know, they're doing their jobs. They're wonderful people. But to make sure that he is still disabled, to make sure that he's getting the care he needs. So you need to have an infrastructure around this. So it costs taxpayers $26 million a year, and it stripped coverage from 18,000 people. And there are a lot of people who say, well, those are people who shouldn't have been on Medicaid to begin with. They didn't lose their their coverage because they didn't qualify for coverage. Mm-hmm. They lost their coverage because they made a mistake on their paperwork, or they didn't meet a deadline, or something else in the process went wrong. Administrative errors. Somebody on the state side made a mistake, because mm-hmm. you're dinged for that too. It's all the responsibility of the recipient. And so, this idea that there are these huge pods of young men, employable, hanging out on their mom's couches at home playing video games, it isn't accurate.
Well, and it's funny that the stats actually are that most of the able-bodied people who aren't working are women in their 40s.
Yeah. Who left the workforce yeah. to care for their families, right? Which is yeah. often what conservatives will tell you is the ideal, right? Mm-hmm. Stay home, take care of, raise your children, right. raise your family, focus on your home, which is wonderful. It's what I did. But yeah, what we're saying is we want you to go back to work and right. you can't get Medicaid. Yeah.
You're damned if you do and you're damned
exactly.
if you don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. You can't win.
Let's talk about the red tape, because the more administrative burden, the greater chance for making mistakes.
Yeah.
And
that's really where we're seeing this, what they're terming as waste, fraud, and abuse.
Right.
It's a slogan now. And I think that we all could agree that none of us really want waste, fraud, and abuse. What we need in place are things to prevent that. But there's not really a good way to measure waste, fraud, and abuse. So how do you know if you're doing better if you can't actually measure it?
Well, then there is the Inspector General's office.
Is there?
Well, back when there was.
Yeah.
But they did do this, and every Medicaid claim goes through two checks, one mm-hmm. with the state, one at the federal level. And I think for Wisconsin in 2023 or 2024, there were 147 cases flagged, right?
1,423 complaints made. And then
147 investigated.
Yes.
And of those 147, there were five
that actually had convictions. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
$7 million recovered.
Which is a lot of money. When you're looking at $11 billion
coming into our state and Medicaid right. funding, it is a drop in the bucket.
And mm-hmm. what did it cost to go through all of those processes? Right.
Exactly.
Well, then Medicaid has one of the lowest administrative rates, too. It's 4%.
Yeah.
Whereas most private are 15 to 20% administration rates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, if only our private insurance was as efficient as Medicaid.
Right? Exactly.
which is what, I mean, unfortunately, they're driving people to by taking it away.
Yes.
If they can afford it. Right.
Right. We're talking with Medicaid advocates Lynn Meschke and Mimi Gerner. Hey, let's talk a little bit about immigrants. I hear there's so much talk about immigrants right now, but one of the major things that I hear from people is, well, those undocumented folks who are taking our Medicaid, right. How does that happen?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
would be the short answer.
Right.
Here in Wisconsin, undocumented immigrants do not have access to Medicaid, except for two very tiny exceptions. Mm-hmm. That is pregnant women and people who are in some sort of emergency healthcare situation.
Mm-hmm.
That accounts for less than 1% of the entire Medicaid budget in our state.
And it's my understanding that these are people who show up in the emergency department
yes.
and need emergency right. care where they cannot be denied care. So really, it's reimbursement to the hospital for providing the care that they
exactly.
are obligated to provide.
Yes.
Right.
And there are states in which undocumented immigrants do get Medicaid services. Those are not paid for with federal funds.
Right.
The states pay for those. That's exactly
right. It's a decision that they made.
Yes.
But this new bill is also trying to take that away from them. So they're saying that the states will have the ability to run their programs. But then they're saying, well, wait, you can't run your program this way because you're insuring yeah. immigrants.
You can't insure undocumented immigrants and still get Medicaid funding.
Dollars.
Yeah, so much for small government.
Right.
And keeping decisions in the states.
Well, and one thing we didn't mention at the top is that Medicaid is a state and federal cooperative program.
Right. It is.
So the federal government provides some of the dollars.
60%.
And the states provide some of the dollars.
Yeah. 40%, correct.
So what we're looking at with the changes that are being proposed right now is shifting a lot of that cost and burden back to the states.
Right.
Yes.
So a state like Wisconsin would then have to take on a much larger portion of the dollars, but also the administrative burden.
Right.
Yes. You're looking at a $400 million annual cut in Medicaid funding to Wisconsin. So that leaves your legislature to decide, our state legislature, to decide what do we cover and what don't we cover.
And they're deciding the budget this year.
Yes, right?
Coincidentally.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't want to be a state legislator right now.
Yeah.
No, or a federal legislator, let's be honest. Right. Yeah, these are tough times, and people are suffering, and they're afraid.
Right, it's unknown. Yes. And I think when you're in a position where your life literally depends on the support you get via Medicaid.
When you can't get out of bed in the morning
without
a caregiver.
And when you don't know what the future for that is, that is a really scary possibility to a lot of people. And that's why people really care about this issue, because there's no strong answers coming from the people who are in charge of making these decisions. And as we've experienced too, there's not a lot of engagement with the people who do know about this or who are invested in these communities.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because both of you have been very outspoken. Mm-hmm. You've gone to meet with your legislators, right. Your federal legislators.
And state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of a response have you gotten?
I'm from a very red area of Wisconsin in Oconto. And my state legislators have been showing up to listen to us. My engagement with them has been either that they want to wait and see what is going to happen at the federal level before they make any decisions about the state, which is unfortunate because they're going to have to probably before these decisions come mm-hmm. down from the federal level, mm-hmm. Or that they are not willing to make any expansions in what they have called the welfare state. And I also attended one of the joint finance hearings in Wausau, and by and large, people at all the state hearings or JFC hearings were advocating for more funding for Medicaid programs and the things that Medicaid supports.
This was the traveling road show.
Correct.
That went all across the state trying to figure out what the people's priorities were so they right. could put the budget together.
Right.
That the JFC has since just right. wiped off the board, and they're coming back with nothing.
Right? It's right. like they listened to what everybody said and then said, we're going to do the exact opposite.
Because there weren't many people there advocating for tax cuts, I'll tell you that. There was not a lot of people standing up to say, you need to save us more money.
Yeah, exists. But the two top things were Medicaid and special education funding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, and let's just emphasize that tax cuts are what is taking priority here federally. These cuts in Medicaid and other things are being made in order to provide tax cuts for the ultra wealthy, not even for us, but for right. the ultra wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of my friends who attended some of these with me, we were talking about how they don't want to expand the welfare state, but they are all about expanding corporate welfare.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been hearing Senator Johnson lately saying that he does not believe that this budget is going to pass on the Senate side because he doesn't want to increase the deficit. So he wants further cuts.
Right.
Yes. And he's not opposed to cutting Medicaid. He wants to cut Medicaid more. Yeah.
Right. But he's messaging it like we can't mortgage our children's futures. Mm-hmm. But he's mortgaging your family's lives mm-hmm.
right.
in mm-hmm. the process.
Yes.
Right.
He didn't have any issue voting for the 2017 tax cuts, and he will vote for extending those tax cuts. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating to talk to these legislators who know very little about how Medicaid works.
Yeah.
They don't want to be educated. They parrot these talking points, and there must have been a memo that went out because you can see it spread through mm-hmm. through the conservative movement. It's the exact same language. It's so frustrating because you offer them data and you offer them your life experience and you open up the most intimate details yeah. of your family's life only to have them. It's like they never heard you. It's like they right. never heard you. They are so, I will say this, I give them a gold star for messaging because they never deviate.
Yeah. But behind all this, it is a choice that they're making.
Yes.
And it's a choice that reflects what their morals are and what their priorities are. And it is not the vulnerable people.
No.
Mm. Oh, that's so painful to hear.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back from this short break, it's our last segment. Mm. So we're going to talk about where do we go from here? What can people do? All right, this is Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We are in a rare moment right now in Wisconsin politics. Why, you ask? Well, it's because we are not actively in the middle of a campaign cycle. It's been more than 6 weeks now since any of us have seen a campaign ad. It's been pretty nice, hasn't it? The moment we're in is as close as we're going to get to a political off-season here in Wisconsin. And we need to take advantage of this moment by taking action to improve our democracy. That means taking steps to address money in politics, cleaning up some issues with election administration, and creating a long-term plan for nonpartisan redistricting. In some cases, we can't make these kinds of changes in the middle of a campaign, so we need to be thinking about what we can do now. There's a lot both parties can agree on here, too. So let's make some moves this offseason, Wisconsin. Seize this moment to make a better, stronger, more inclusive democracy.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cow's milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of our cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Celebrating our dairy farmers with this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and my amazing guests this week are Medicaid advocates Lynn Meschke and Mimi Gerner. You both have shared a lot of deeply personal information, and you are so powerful as you use your voices and help people understand what this means to us personally, but also to our communities and to us as a state, really. This is so much bigger than just something that's happening in your home. But sometimes we hear people say, well, these stories are just fear-mongering. You're just trying to scare us. What would you say to those people?
I would say I'm telling you the reality of what this is going to mean in my family and in, you know, 1.4 million households across Wisconsin. We understand how the system works. We know what happens when you add more red tape and more paperwork. We know what that looks like, and we know it's not just us. I mean, if you look at the data, you know that this results in people who should be qualified for Medicaid losing their coverage. And not only is it damaging to their family, it's damaging to our communities. It's damaging to, I think it's damaging to the psyche of our state. We have made choices about investing in our most vulnerable people and in caring for them. That's the thing I love about Wisconsin, is we take care of each other. That's a very Midwest philosophy. And this blows that out of the water.
I do have to like piggyback on that, because I recently lost Medicaid at the beginning of the month because
I make too much, and my kids were uninsured now. So I went from having that security. My daughter, I just discovered, had a hole in her heart, too. So I went from having that security of I don't have to make a choice on when I take her in to now I have to pick and choose what might be serious enough to take her in. Can I foot that bill?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And she's so young.
She's 2 years old.
People shouldn't have to make those decisions. And what kills me is that these cuts are being made by people who don't know the system, don't want to learn the system, and will never, ever lay awake at night wondering if they can take their child who has a hole in her heart to the doctor for the care that she needs. Yeah. They will never, ever face these challenges. And it's heartbreaking to me. I don't understand why there isn't more compassion and empathy for people who are really struggling just to make it in the world.
And I strongly believe if they would take the time to run in the circles that we run in, right? If they would spend time with families of disabled children or just the working poor or people who use Medicaid for whatever the reason is, that they would have more empathy for these people and not be making these choices, but they don't, and they are deliberately choosing not to.
Well, and I think it's important to note that this wasn't always, this used to be a universally agreed upon philosophy in Wisconsin.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
We care for the people who need it. And just a couple of examples. Tommy Thompson, four-time Republican governor, right? I mean, he's like the poster child for Republicanism in Wisconsin. He developed and piloted the first family care program.
Yes.
Family care is what allows seniors and people with disabilities to live in their homes, be engaged in their communities, and stay out of institutions. Representative Kitty Rhodes helped develop the IRIS program, also a Republican. Scott Walker lifted the caps on family care and expanded it statewide. So these used to be conversations we just never had. It was a line in the sand. We care for the people who need it. And all of that has changed, and it is very disconcerting.
Well, and they're propagating the saying of that they're strengthening this program for the vulnerable, when in fact what they're doing and what every expert and every data point is backing up is that they are not doing that.
It's the opposite.
Yeah. Yes. The things that they say they care about, waste, fraud, and abuse, forcing people, making people who should be working work, all of those sorts of things, none of these measures actually achieve that.
Yeah.
And if there's a conversation to be had about improvements to Medicaid and ways to tighten up Medicaid, and that's a conversation we're willing to have.
And that we would have great input
absolutely.
As stakeholders.
We would love to be at the table for that conversation. That isn't what is happening here at all.
So for our friends who are listening and they want to do something about this, what can they do?
We, our group of advocacy, we are hosting some events to hopefully foster some community within this conversation. We have some events coming up where we are hosting viewing parties for a documentary by PBS. So yay, PBS, that's called Change Not Charity. And we're hoping to host them in every congressional district around the state. But that's something that people can look for. But I want to just encourage people to keep calling their lawmakers and reaching out for community and looking for the data points, looking for truth, talking to the stakeholders. And before you believe something, make sure it's true.
Yeah. I would say if you have a Medicaid story, tell your story because it is so powerful. If you don't know a lot about Medicaid, get educated. One source that I use is the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. They have a wonderful Facebook group, a Facebook page, a wonderful website. They hold a webinar every Friday morning.
It's
amazing. And it talks about these cuts to Medicaid, and they've since expanded it. So it talks about Medicare and SNAP and all of these other programs as well. You can get so much good information there, and it gives you the language that when you're having conversations in the community, you can say, I know that's what your conservative legislator has told you, but in reality, this, and this. It has been wonderful. Don't be afraid to have tough conversations with your friends and your family. Do not be ashamed to be on Medicaid. That is what these folks want, is that you will be embarrassed to be on Medicaid and you won't tell your story. And like Mimi said, reach out to your legislators. Use the Five Calls app, which is wonderful, gives you a script, right? It's scary the first time you do it. After a while, you'll be addicted to it. You'll be making not 5 calls a day, you'll be making 10 calls a day.
It's so easy. And you can do it on so many different topics, not just this one.
Yes, absolutely. And call them every day. Don't just call them once. Call them every day.
You two are brilliant. I'm so grateful to you, Lynn Meschke, Mimi Gerner, Medicaid advocates. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Let's keep talking. And friends out there, I want to hear from you. Send me ideas for topics, guests, music, you name it. This is our conversation and we can talk about whatever we want. You can always find me at Dr. Kristen Lyerly on all the socials. And if you missed any of our conversation, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. Come on back next Saturday and Sunday at 3. We're talking about Pride next week. See you then.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. Over 80 shots fired at a party last night in Mountain View, North Carolina, says the sheriff's office at a news conference in the past hour. It says 2 shooters were involved, 12 people wounded, 1 is dead. An absolutely brilliant result is what Ukrainian President Zelensky calls it. Ukrainian drones attacked 4 Russian military airfields overnight, damaging or destroying about 40 planes, including bombers. That's billions of dollars in damage to Russia's military, says ABC News contributor and former Defense Department official Mick Mulroy.
It's really unprecedented, and it's going to be reviewed by everyone. It shows that the Ukrainians are definitely still in this fight. Any idea that they're losing, I think, is going to be turned around by this.
After the Gaza Health Ministry said Israeli troops opened fire on people at a food distribution center in Rafah, Israeli military officials say Israeli troops acted against several suspects. This is ABC News. Smoke from